This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
What up, y'all? It's your boy Danny Green, three-time NBA champ. You either rooted for me or rooted against me. Join myself and my co-host Harrison Sanford on the Inside the Green Room podcast.
It's a podcast that brings you never-before-told tales from the locker room to candid interviews with basketball legends to breakdowns of what's happening in the NBA right now. Whether you're a diehard fan or casual about your hoops, this podcast brings you the game like never before.
Follow Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Adam Spillane, Cecil Shorts in for Seth and Sean. Final hour of the show. Kevin Zlotnick from the Sugarland Skeeters is going to join us in the next segment. But first, I want to react to our discussion with John McClain. And thank you again to John for joining us the last hour. But in the middle of that, John ran through issue after issue after issue that the NFL faces in trying to play a 2020 season. And this went on for minutes. I mean, this wasn't some short thing. This went on for minutes, and it went uninterrupted. And as John was talking, I'm looking at Cecil, and Cecil's demeanor, he just, like, dropped. And you asked the question, and I'm going to ask you the same question. Is it even worth it at this point? When you hear all those issues that the NFL has to try and figure out just to play a season, and they don't have a lot of time to do it. No. I mean, you have essentially – not even 3 weeks to try and figure this out. What are we doing here?
John did a great job of laying it out, and I can't even remember and repeat everything he said. Hopefully we can get it back up through the other shows today or even online some type of way. But he did a great job breaking it down. Just thinking of, is it worth it or not? At this point, you have to consider just postponing it and moving it to the spring or something. It's just a lot that goes into bringing a restart, or not a restart, but starting the season. And there's so many guys, there's so many coaches, there's so many staff members, there's so many people that can be affected by this. It's going to be very complicated on how to run it. And even if you do shut it down, how to shut it down. It's just like a possibly a lose-lose situation. It's tough either way it goes.
And obviously, the big reason why you play the season is financial. And this is financial for everybody. And,
yeah, for sure.
It's important. I mean, you can't just ignore the fact that the money matters for everybody, because guys need this is their livelihoods. I mean, for you as a player, that's crippling if you lose out on a year of salary. I mean, most people cannot survive missing out on a year of salary. And listen, NFL players are paid well, but not all of them. I mean, a lot of them have to scratch and claw for a lot, and it's tough, man. This is that I knew there were going to be issues, and we've talked about the issues and how the NFL has tried to portray that it's business as usual, but it's not. And half the things that John talked about, I hadn't even thought about before.
Like, to be quite frank, I truly believe when teams start to come together for training camp and they do the testing, however they're going to do the testing, because we don't know how that's going to happen. John brought that up. When they do the testing, there's going to be a group of guys on each team that gets it, that has it. You know what I mean? Whether they know it or not, it's going to be a group of 10, 15, 20 guys, just like you see when it comes to the colleges. It's going to be very similar. There goes, I mean, UT had at one point, I think 24, 25 guys have it.
Clemson's been in the 30s.
And now what's the protocol from there? Do you put these guys away in a hotel? Do they can't go back home? Like, what do you do from there? It's all these questions. And the season is starting. So the season is how it's going, right? So you'll be out with, say, 15 guys get tested positive. Those 15 guys are out. Now you're down to, it was 75. Now you're down to whatever number that is, right? And now you're practicing them. Now when those guys come back, they got to go through a protocol and make sure they're okay. And then they come back. It's just so much that goes into it. It's a mess, man.
The NFL has been lucky in the fact that they are the last sport to try yes. and pull this off.
Yes.
They've had the benefit of time. They've had the benefit of watching how other leagues have reacted and how other leagues have tried to pull this off. But at the same time, it's tougher on the NFL because of just how many players you actually have.
Yes.
I mean, the NBA, you have a 17-man roster. That's it. You can keep these guys away from each other a lot easier. I mean, you can have a meeting with your full team, and you can do it in one room. Major League Baseball, it's tougher for Major League Baseball, but it's not impossible. The Major League Baseball field is much bigger. You have different position groups that you can obviously split off. You can split off into position groups. So that makes things a little bit easier. But you can't do that in the NFL. It's really, really, really difficult to pull off. And you can have meetings over Zoom, and obviously that's what teams have done. But at some point, you got to try and get into a room together. And I don't know if that's feasible at this point.
To be honest, I don't know if it will. No, I agree with you. I don't think it is feasible right now. Now, in football, you can split up in position mm-hmm. groups, but that's a lot of positions, right? Whereas baseball is less, if that makes sense.
Well, it's a lot of positions, but also...
And it's two sides of the ball.
But receivers, how many? There's, what, going to be 6, 7, 8 receivers on a team right now at the start of training camp?
No. It'll be 12 to 13. It'll be a lot.
How many offensive linemen you gonna have in that room?
12 to 13.
How many defensive linemen?
Same.
Like secondary guys.
It's a lot, man.
I mean, a quarterback room, yeah, it's gonna be small. And then you get coaching staffs in there.
Yep.
And as John pointed out, coaches are older.
Yes,
and
they are.
And they're high risk. And Romeo Crennel is 70 years old. He's a high risk guy. I knew it was gonna be tough. I didn't realize how tough. And then you get into some of the other things with the hotels, and you don't know who's in the hotel. Is the NFL just going to rent out entire hotels? How's that going to play out? They can't. That's a lot of money to rent out an entire hotel for a day. Are you just going to travel on game day? Like John said, what happens if there's an issue with the plane?
Yeah.
That happens all the time. What happens if there's weather issues? You're playing games in December and January. What happens if you can't take off? That happens all the time. What if a team doesn't want to go to Texas? Texas is not exactly the safest place to be right now.
I even think about that.
I didn't
say that. I even think about that. Like, what if you just don't want to come?
And the Astros are going to deal with the same thing. What if 2 weeks from now, the Seattle Mariners say, you know what? Cases in Texas keep going up and up and up. And yesterday we hit a record with the number of cases. It's not safe for us to go to Texas. We're not going to go.
Right.
These are the questions that haven't been asked yet because we haven't had to. But as these sports try to start, not just restart, but try and start, these are the questions that need to be asked at this point. And again, the NBA is going into Orlando. At least that environment is somewhat controlled.
Yes.
But with Major League Baseball,
you're in a bubble at least. You know what I mean?
With Major League Baseball, these guys aren't really going to be in a controlled environment. And they're going to go to a hotel, and there are going to be other guests in the hotel. What happens then? So this is a lot more complicated than I think people are starting to realize.
Yeah, with travel, same MLB and football kind of in the same boat with the travel, with the hotels, dealing with people that's you just don't know what's going on there, what happened before there. It's just so many levels to this. It's going to be interesting. I'm interested to see because I was looking at Darius Slay's tweets while John was talking, and he was like, we should get bonuses for going out there and playing. But you can say whatever about that. But my thought process is, will big name guys like him and others say, no, I'm not going to play. No, I'm going to sit this year out.
A lot of those guys don't need the money.
They don't need
a
the
lot
money.
Of those guys have been paid and they are well off and they don't need to put themselves through it. And just for safety, the health risk, but also just the injury risk that comes with it.
Yeah.
I mean, that can alter your career if you come into a season and you aren't prepared to play because you haven't had a full offseason. So these are the questions that are going to have to be answered. And with the NFL, you don't have a whole lot of time to try and answer those questions. We'll try and circle back to that towards the end of the show. But we're going to take a break. And when we come back, there is a team in Houston, in the Houston area, is going to start playing this weekend. They are going to start playing in front of fans. The Sugarland Skeeters are starting their own league for the 2020 season. We're going to hear from the owner, Kevin Zlotnick. He's going to explain how that's going to work. What are the health protocols that they are going to use? It's a fascinating venture, and he's going to tell us about it next on Sports Radio 610. Adam Spillane and Cecil Cooper in for Seth and Sean with you until 10 o'clock.
You called me Cooper again.
Did I do it again?
You called me Cooper again. That's two days in a row.
Cecil Shorts. I don't know why I have, I don't know why I have a bad Astros manager in my head, but it keeps happening. We're joined now by Kevin Zlotnick, the owner of the Sugarland Skeeters, and the Skeeters are going to be playing this weekend. They are essentially starting their own league for the 2020 season, and we're going to let Kevin talk about that and go into some of the health protocols that they're having to deal with. Kevin, good morning. Thank you for joining us. I just want to start with exactly explain how this league came about, how the idea came about, and basically how it came together and what the plan is for the season.
Sure. Well, that's a lot of questions at once, but Adam and Cecil, I appreciate you guys having me on this morning and hope y'all are well. I think the genesis of the league kind of came about 6 or 8 weeks ago. Roger Clemens was actually throwing some batting practice to his kids out on the field at Constellation Field. And he goes, "Hey guys, you know, minor league baseball is not going to play this year. These are professional athletes." And Cecil would know as a former professional athlete, if you're working on your, if you're a professional and you go 12 or 14 months without playing a live game, that's detrimental to your long-term outlook as a professional athlete. You're just not getting the proper training in. And I said, "Well, Roger, you know, let's see what happens. This would be a monumental undertaking." And then one of our great staff members also brought up the same idea and said, "Why don't we just do our own league? We'll take matters into our own hands. It'll be a huge undertaking, but why don't we give it a shot?" And that's where we are. And we'll start Friday night, and it's a four-team league, 56 games. So each team will play 28 games, and we've got incredibly talented rosters, and we're excited.
How many players on each team?
There'll be about 22 guys on each team. So I think we have 90-something guys in our abbreviated spring training right now.
And you are you have everyone staying essentially in a hotel right now?
So we have a number of local guys that are allowed to stay at their residence if they're local, or if, you know, they have family that's local. But the rest of them are at the Marriott Town Square in Sugarland. So, yes.
Okay, cool. So is the league made up of just local guys here, or is it other cities involved as well?
No. So all the guys will, for the next 2 months, will be based out of Sugarland and stay in Sugarland, but all the players are from anywhere. Nice. Obviously, if you're local, you're more likely to want to play because you're you know, taking less of a burden of traveling and all that stuff. But we've got guys from all over the country.
Very nice. As far as the fan, are fans allowed at the game? Is that correct?
Yes, fans will be allowed at the game. We've gotten the proper approvals from local and state officials, and we're going at 25% occupancy, so we can have roughly 1,800 people at the game, and our stadium normally holds 7,500. So we're taking all the proper health and safety protocols we possibly can. We'll do temperature checks when folks are coming in. Nice. We're doing temperature checks and testing of all the players. So, we're not cutting corners from that aspect at all.
Kevin Zlotnick, the owner of the Sugarland Skeeters, joining us on Sports Radio 610. I want to get to the testing in a second, but first with the fans. I know that you are requiring masks upon entry. Are you going to regulate it so that people have to keep the masks on once they are inside the stadium?
While they're inside the stadium and on the concourse, they will be required to wear their mask. Once they reach their seats, they will not be required to wear a mask. They'll be, we've diagrammed the ballpark out where, you'll be at least 6 feet apart from anybody that you're not with. And at that point, you will not have to wear a mask. But if you were to, go buy a hot dog and a beer back at the concession stand, you would be required to put your mask back on. We've actually contracted a concession delivery company, so if you download the Seats app, you'll be able to order whatever food you need just from your phone, and it'll be delivered to you. So, we've really, tried to do everything the right way.
So if I come with somebody, I can sit next to that person. How many seats would be in between us and the next people?
So every other row will be empty. So there'll be nobody in front or behind you. Someone could possibly be across the aisle from you. So basically we've positioned people on all the aisles in groups of four. So there'll be a number of seats in the middle of the row that will be vacant. and then in front and behind you.
Kevin Zlotnick from the Sugar Land Skeeters joining us on Sports Radio 610. All right, I want to talk about testing. How often are you testing players?
So every player had to arrive in Sugar Land with a test, and then we immediately tested them again on Sunday. And we expect to get those results in 48 to 72 hours. And then every Sunday, every player and coach will be tested again.
What happens if there are positive tests?
Well, they will be sent to quarantine and will require multiple negative tests before being allowed to return to play.
How long? You already told me how long the season is. But as far as the players, are they excited? I'm sure they're ready to get going some baseball. This is, sounds like a great idea, just to have something live going on in Houston. So how excited are you to really get things going and from going really fast?
We're excited. I mean, there's been an incredible amount of work put in by our front office staff over the last 3 or 4 weeks to get this thing off the ground. And, you know, when we look at things, it's all about doing things right for the community. After Hurricane Harvey, we had people sleeping in the stadium. We were cooking them food. We did, donation drives. We've done the same thing in terms of PPE supply drive at the beginning of COVID-19. And what we want to do is, you know, bring some semblance of normalcy, continue to employ a ton of people and just try to bring some joy. Whether that means you want to watch our game on TV, we're going to be on AT&T Sportsnet a number of times prior to the Astros starting up, or you want to show up or you want to wait and see a month, we'll be here. It's not about the dollars and cents in this situation. It's about doing what's right for the Sugar Land of Fort Bend and greater Houston community.
Was there a training camp or something installed so the coaches can get familiar with the players and whatnot, and how did that go?
So it's ongoing right now. Once players get their negative results, they're allowed to come to the ballpark and start working. But, you know, the managers kind of work together. They know a lot of these guys. I mean, they're very familiar with these guys. We've got about 30 ex-big leaguers. Interestingly enough, you know, with all the craziness between Major League and Minor League Baseball, we have a number of guys that are under contract with Major League organizations, which obviously we've never had because the Atlantic League is an independent organization. So these guys are talented guys. The managers know of them. They're in contact with scouts all over Major League Baseball and say, hey, you should take this guy. You should take this guy. You know, this guy had a really good offseason where he was working out back home, and they tried to evenly split up the teams.
Kevin
spring training's abbreviated, which is a couple days.
Kevin Zlotnick from the Sugar Land Skeeters joining us on Sports Radio 610. You brought up having players that are contracted with major league organizations. That obviously is not something that happens in independent baseball. What was the process like in having those organizations allow you to take their players for the season?
Complicated. Very complicated. So it's got to be a player-driven thing. So it could not have been the Houston Astros or the Texas Rangers calling someone on our staff saying, hey, you guys should take Forrest Whitley, for example. We don't have Forrest Whitley, but just a name that people would be familiar with. It had to be the player or the player agent talking to their specific organization saying, hey, we want to be released. And I guess signing some sort of waiver or getting clearance from their major league organization and then reaching out to us and saying, hey, we have our clearance. We can play.
Do you know of any players that wanted to play and they did not get that clearance from their organization?
I do.
Okay. You don't have to give names, but yeah, I was just wondering if there were some teams that weren't going to allow
it. It's more on the pitching side.
Yes, that was going to be the next question.
And that makes sense, right?
Yep.
I mean,
yep.
Look, everybody knows, you know, we're a pretty well-known organization, excuse me. And people know we treat our players the right way and we've got a great facility and we're not going to overwork them. But there was still some hesitancy from some major league organizations to tell their, you know, first round pitcher last year, yeah, you can go out and throw without having us supervise. But, you know, like Cody Clemens and Trey Cruz, two middle infielders with high ceilings in the Detroit Tigers organization, both from the Houston area. You know, the Tigers said, look, this would be great for you guys to go out and play 28 games and get 100 some odd at bats. Go for it.
For sure. What about the media attendance? Are you guys going to do media over Zoom? I'm kind of assuming probably won't be face-to-face with everything that's going on. What would that look like after the games and before the games and during practice and stuff?
So yesterday, I know we had a number of news outlets out there in person. Mm-hmm. And just like and I know we had an open tryout a week or so ago, and we had a number of outlets, and they're maintaining their 6 feet distance and using the extended microphones and things like that. But I believe that we are allowing media to be there in person. Nice. After the games is a little tricky. We're not, we're not using our clubhouses in the traditional sense. Players are being told you're not allowed to shower at this point inside the clubhouse. You need to show up. You'll have time to get into the clubhouse and change, but it'll be brief. You'll have time to get your training, get on the training table with the trainers, do all that stuff, but don't hang out in the clubhouse. And after the game, get in there, take off your clothes, let the clubhouse clubbies, do their job with the laundry, but get back to the hotel and shower. So there won't be a lot of, media availability after the game, I wouldn't envision.
Kevin Zlotnick, owner of the Sugarland Skeeters, joining us on Sports Radio 610. The Skeeters are going to play on Friday. They are basically starting their own league for this season, the Constellation Energy League. They will play 28 games, a four-team league. They will have fans, and again, that starts on Friday. I want to ask you one big picture independent baseball question, because you are starting to see teams, and minor league baseball is essentially getting gutted by MLB. How does that help the model of independent league baseball and just the player pool that you might have available to you in the future?
It's definitely interesting, Adam. I think obviously if there's going to be less affiliated minor league teams, then there'll be more talented guys available for the Skeeters and the Greater Atlantic League and some of the other independent leagues around. But, the Atlantic League specifically has such veteran players already. It's basically AAA ball. The only difference is we don't have the stud 21-year-old guy. Those guys are going to stay in their major league organizations, and that won't change if they're down an affiliate or two. So I don't know, just because the Atlantic League normally has so many ex-big leaguers in it already, that some of the guys that are going to be released when there's 120 teams instead of 160, it may help the lesser independent leagues more than the Atlantic League, but there'll certainly be some interesting guys available that the Skeeters and teams in our league will take a look at in the coming years.
Real quick, how much are the tickets? My kids, they would be mad if I didn't ask. Will there be some type of mascots running around? Will there be fireworks?
So there will be fireworks. We're going to do a bunch of fireworks over the course of the year, and that's on our website. And Cecil, if you and your kids want to come out, the tickets are on us for sure. We'd love to have you out. And, some of the stuff that we generally have open, which makes our facility, so well regarded, will be closed. So just like your local park, the playground equipment's closed. Our playground equipment will be closed. Some of the inflatable activities will be closed. And this first weekend, our splash pad will be closed, but we hope to open that in the coming weeks. Our swimming pool will still be open. Our basketball court will be closed. Some of those great activities that we're known for won't be available this year, unfortunately. But things are fluid, and hopefully towards the end of the season we can have some more activities for kids, but definitely a bunch of fireworks shows coming over the next 8 weeks.
That's Kevin Zlotnick, owner of the Sugarland Skeeters. Kevin, good luck with it. I really hope it works out. I think it's a really good idea, especially with no minor league baseball this season. It's good to get those guys that are in affiliated baseball an opportunity, and the guys that have gotten released, it gives them an opportunity as well. Thanks so much for taking the time to join us today.
Thanks for having us, guys, and I look forward to seeing you all at the ballpark.
That's Kevin Zlotnick, Sugarland Skeeters owner. We're going to take one last break, and when we come back, we're going to react to some of the things that we have heard today and also take a look at a big Rockets trade that was made a couple of years ago. That's next on Sports Radio 610. Adam Spillane, Cecil Shorts. I said it right that time.
There you go.
We got one more segment. Wade and Landry will replace us. It's been quite a morning. And I thank you to John McClain and Kevin Zlotnick for joining us throughout the morning. The stuff with McClain was, that hit you in the face a little bit.
Yeah.
Just understanding how difficult it's going to be for the NFL to try and pull off the season. And then I was with Kevin Zlotnick and the Skeeters. it's not going to be easy to pull off, I think. But I respect them for giving it a shot and giving a bunch of players an opportunity and giving people in the Sugar Land area, in the Houston area, you know, something to do.
I think that's pretty cool what they're doing over there with the Skeeters. Like you said, it's something to do. It's a live event, a live sporting event that you can go to if you live in the area. They're following the proper protocols. They went through all the hoops and everything to make sure that they were approved to do everything. So it looks like it's going to be some good baseball over there, and they got some solid prospects as well. So it's going to be pretty cool.
Yeah, like you said, they're not doing that for money because they're paying these guys, and it's not like they can go sell a bunch of tickets. I mean, they're going to sell some, but they're not going to be able to sell out that stadium. So, you know, it's like I said, I really hope it works out. I hope it is successful, and I hope it brings them, you know, more success in the future.
And real quick, they've always seemed like they've been good in the community. He mentioned a few things they did in Hurricane Harvey and whatnot. Mm-hmm. So to continue to be out here in the community, doing things for it, is pretty cool.
Yeah, I give them a lot of credit. Let's shift gears a little bit to the Rockets because they are headed to Orlando tomorrow. So they are in Orlando tomorrow. They will do their 2-day quarantine, and then they will actually start practicing a little bit. I don't know exactly when they're allowed to start 5-on-5s, but they will get to practice and experience life in the bubble, and they will start playing games in, what, 3 weeks? They've got scrimmages coming up. They have scrimmages in a couple of weeks. But I did want to go back, and you brought this up, so I'm going to let you talk. The Chris Paul trade was made 2 years ago, and it is very possible the Rockets could see Chris Paul and the Thunder in the first round of the playoffs. Would you do the Chris Paul trade again if you're the Rockets?
Would I do it again? Yes, because you came very close to reaching your goal if it wasn't for a hamstring. You were a hamstring pull, or maybe he didn't stretch good enough, or maybe he didn't drink enough water that day, say an ounce of water from reaching your goal. And I think you would have won a championship that year. So, yes, I thought the trade was awesome. I thought it worked well. But was it a success, in my opinion? No, simply because you didn't accomplish the ultimate goal, right? And when you make a big trade like that, a big splash, and you bring that high caliber of a name in, the high caliber of a player in, you expect to win a championship. And you were right there. You were as close as you could be, but you didn't accomplish the goal. So for me, yes, absolutely. In a heartbeat, I would do it again. I think it was smart. I think it worked well. I think that year was an exceptional year. And then after that, he kind of fell off a little bit. He still was productive, but he wasn't the same CP that we're used to seeing and saw the year before. And then now he's in Oklahoma City, and he's got his guys rolling, man. He got his guys playing really well. But to answer the question, yes, I'll do it in a heartbeat.
You see, you say it wasn't successful. And listen, I would do it again in a heartbeat as well. I think it changed the organization. It also got them P.J. Tucker. P.J. Tucker would not be here without that trade. That also needs to be factored in. But I think that when you say it's not successful, I think that almost it undervalues how difficult it is to win an NBA championship. Because the team that they were, first of all, so the team that they had before was good. That was a good team. That was a team that won 50-something games. Mm-hmm. In Mike D'Antoni's first year. But that team basically capped out. That team wasn't going to get better from what it was that year, which was losing in the second round to San Antonio. By making the trade, they knew that, okay, we're good, but we think that we can get to great. And that trade showed that, yes, that team could be great by adding Chris Paul. But the team that they were going up against might be the best team of all time. And you can certainly argue that the 2017-2018 Warriors are right up there, where you have four Hall of Famers in their prime. Andre Iguodala is another possible Hall of Famer near the end of his prime. That's a great team. Mm-hmm. That's a great team that went through the playoffs 16-1 in 2017. And by the time they played the Rockets in the Western Conference Finals, that team had lost a total of 3 playoff games in 2 years. And would go on to...
That's crazy.
And they swept the finals after they played the Rockets. So in those 2 years in the postseason, they went 28-3 against teams that weren't the Rockets. Mm-hmm. And they went 4-3 against the Rockets. They got as close as you can get to taking down that team, and they didn't do it. I don't think that makes it unsuccessful.
when you make the trade, were you making the trade trying to be great, or were you making the trade trying to win a championship in mind?
They were making the trade trying to win a championship in mind, but when they made it, they even said, we're not there yet. So when Daryl Morey made that trade, he didn't say, all right, we're right there with the Warriors. He said, this gets us closer.
Well, he was wrong, because he was wrong to a standpoint where, to me, they were great. They were right there. They had him on their heels. If it wasn't for the hamstring, do they win that series?
I don't know. I think that's impossible to say. I think it's really difficult to say. I think they have a better chance of winning, obviously, if Chris Paul is there. But, again, you're talking about possibly the best team of all time.
I just don't see, and like I said, I'll do the trade again in a heartbeat. I think it was an awesome trade. Great job by Morey figuring it out, getting the right pieces in place. You made a good point. You got Tucker in the trade as well. And you were in position to be the best you could be, the best team that you had in a long time. And you had this group of players that played extremely well together. To me, the ultimate goal is a championship. That's why maybe success is the wrong word, right? But the ultimate goal is a championship. And you don't trade for that type of player. You don't make a big splash like that to not win a championship. So did they have great years together? Absolutely. I guess you could say it was a success, but did they achieve the ultimate goal is how I view it, if that makes sense. Yeah,
it's for me, it's not, I guess,
success is just the wrong word for it. But did they win the championship? Did they complete the ultimate goal? If they would have did that, oh man, it would have been, yes, a huge success. Yeah. But to me, that's just how I view it.
I always think it's dangerous when you base the success of a season based on one series.
Yeah.
I think it's depressing for players.
It is depressing.
I could do everything great, but you know, I lose one game, and you know, we missed a bunch of threes in a row, and now all of a sudden our season goes from we had the best season that we've ever had in the regular season, and now the season's a failure. I hate that. I don't like that. I don't like saying, well, we got to the finals, but we lost game seven. Our season's a failure. No, that's not a failure. It's a great year. That's a great year. There was just, you were better than 29 of 30 teams, you just weren't better than the 30th team. And that 30th team is really, 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 really,
one of the best teams
really
ever,
good.
Like,
yeah, exactly.
Out.
Exactly. I'll say this. The 49ers last year, is that season a success or a failure?
The 49ers?
Yes.
It was a success.
Okay.
I didn't expect them to go that far, that good. Before the season started, I wouldn't say, oh, they are a, you know, what you call it, a Super Bowl contender right away.
But they didn't win a championship.
They were successful, yes. I see your point. They were successful, yes.
All right, what about, I was going to say the Ravens, but they were kind of in a similar boat, but they finished with the best record in the NFL.
But their season,
they lost their first game.
Their season was not a success.
You don't think it was a success?
No. Because if you look at what they did throughout the year, you're like, oh my gosh, this team could go far. This team could make some noise come playoff time. And they led the biggest egg I have seen in a long time in the playoffs. They look completely opposite of what they did all year long. And by a team that probably shouldn't have been on the field with them, talent-wise.
I don't like taking 16, 17 games and declaring those games a failure because of one.
They had a great regular season. The playoffs, which is a whole nother season, they stunk.
The second season was unsuccessful.
They were 0-1 and gone home. Right. They watched a game with us. Lamar was watching a game with you and me, Adam.
All right. First season successful, second season unsuccessful. All right, I want to let's talk a little bit about McLean and what he said about the season. And we've had some time to discuss this. And I will say, your demeanor in this room has changed over the last hour and a half just hearing that. Because, so my question is, were you encouraged by the fact that there could be a season before you heard John McLean on this show?
I was always nervous. But when I heard John, I had a feeling it's going to be a season. We'll figure it out. Maybe, you know, somebody, you know, gets a virus. They sit out a couple of weeks, like a big name or something, but we'll have a season. They'll play ball. After listening to McLean, I don't know what the heck's going to happen. Like, it's just so many different variables that I didn't even think about that comes to play. And one of the things he talked about, what if somebody doesn't want to play in Houston? Well, somebody just doesn't want to come to Houston. The player just say, hey, I'm not comfortable coming
or
to Houston.
Or Texas. You have two teams
or
in Texas.
Texas.
You have three teams
Period.
In Florida. There are three teams in Florida. That's a sixth of your league. And then you can throw in Arizona, too. And then if you really want to branch out, California.
Which is numerous teams over there. So it's like, you can't knock them for saying that. Like, hey, I'm not comfortable with going there and playing. And it's like, you're going to travel on a regular basis and the NFL is trying to do things as normal as possible, but that's just not the case. Like, I don't know if you can, and how can a player or a coach, like you mentioned, Romeo Crennel, who's possibly in his, almost in his 70s or is in his 70s. Like, he can be affected in a dangerous way from this. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's just a lot of coaches in the league are around that age. So it's like you're risking a lot to be able to play this game. It's like, it's so many different variables. And John mentioned a lot of different things, and I still can't remember everything he brought up, but it's like, wow, should we even be considering this right now? Like, is this worth the risk?
And a lot of these coaches, like you said, they're older. They're not in great shape either.
They're not.
I mean, they just aren't. They sit in a room and they're watching film essentially the entire day. It's not the healthiest lifestyle. Now, there's one thing that I do want to talk about, and a texter sent this in at 713-572-4610. I'm not some virus hysteric.
Yeah.
I'm just not. But the bringing up the death rate, I think, is dangerous. And saying, okay, yes, I understand that no athletes who have tested positive for coronavirus have died, but we don't know necessarily the long-term effects of this thing yet. I mean, this is still so early in the process, and there is evidence that, you know, the guys that do show symptoms could have long-term effects with their lungs,
yeah,
and things like that. So yes, the death rate is low, and I'm glad it is. Thank God.
Absolutely.
The death rate is low.
Absolutely.
But it doesn't mean there aren't long-term effects moving forward. We just don't know yet. We just don't.
And we got to keep this in fact too, and just keep remembering this too. Just because no athletes have died from this virus as of right now doesn't mean they're not passing it on to regular people who are not athletes, who their immune system may not be as strong to, you know what I mean? So it's just so many different things that goes into it. Awesome. The death rate has not skyrocketed, right?
It's going down.
It's going down, but it's still a virus that we still are learning about. Yes. There's so much that goes into it. We don't know everything about the virus yet. Obviously, we don't have a vaccine yet. We don't even know how to fight it all the way yet. So it's still, we have to be careful and understand what's going on.
Yeah, this has been in the national conscience for what, 5 months?
Yeah.
That's not a lot of time. It just isn't. And you've seen players who they might not have contracted it, but their mothers have. Carl Anthony Towns' mother passed away because of this. And
ooh, that's a good point. Yeah.
So
yeah.
Now, a player can stay away from their parents if they want, but there's other things to consider other than the death rate. That's all I'm going to say about it. And like I said, I'm not a hysteric about this stuff, and I'm not one of these people that thinks that you should cancel everything and everything should shut down. But at the same time, you do need to be cognizant of everything that's around you and understand that we don't know everything yet.
We don't. And you have to be extremely cautious. So, yes, awesome. The death rate is going down. Awesome. No athlete just passed away. Awesome. Athletes are able to fight it. But what about the person that can't?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? What about the person that may contract it from them, or the person that interacted with the athlete and that individual contracts with somebody else? It's just like an ongoing effect. So we got to be extremely careful and just try to understand it and let them do their job, whoever's dealing with the doctors and everything else, and try to figure this thing out, man. But this is it's almost scary sometimes if you really think about it. I try to keep it at a level where it's, you know, we're talking about sports on the radio, right? So I try to keep it at that level. But if you get deep into it, it kind of worries you a little bit, and you don't want to get to that place.
And that's basically what happened today. And John McClain brought it up, and I'm glad he did.
Yeah.
I'm glad that he put that in our heads, because I remember I was in here last with you. It was what, 17, 18 weeks ago, and this was when everything, we knew this virus was out there, but we didn't know exactly what it was.
Right, right.
And here we are. We're still dealing with it, and we're going to be dealing with it for a long time, and it's just something that you got to get used to, and it's the conversation that you have to have. And I will say, I think the NBA is doing the right thing by trying. I think these leagues are smart by trying to restart.
Mm-hmm.
It's just really difficult to pull off. It's going to be really tough. And I will say the Astros had that big hiccup on Monday. They are confident that everything's going to get worked out. But you still got to see it happen. And
yeah,
we're in uncharted waters with this right now.
It is. But it's good to know, like, for example, you mentioned how the Astros were on top of things. It's good to know that you talk to a MLB coach and an MLB player on two separate teams. So that's three different teams that are on top of things. No negative or no positive test. And the guys that are running the practices, the coaches, the trainers, everything there, putting the players and coaches in the best situations they can to be able to function and not have the virus.
It's just easier for those sports because there's fewer people.
Yeah.
But an NFL team has a 53-man roster, plus a practice squad, plus the guys you bring in for training camp, plus huge coaching staffs.
Yeah.
You got a 20-man coaching staff in the NFL. It's a lot of, plus a training staff.
Trainers.
There's a lot of people, and all these people are going to go home.
Yep.
And so
you got interns that's working. Mm-hmm. You got people. Yeah, it's a lot that goes into it, for sure.
Just everyone, just be wary of what's going on. Be cognizant of what's going on around you and stay safe. That's all I can say. Cecil, this was fun the last couple of days.
Absolutely.
Sean Bajani will be back in here with you on Thursday and Friday. Wade Smith and Landry Locker are going to follow us. Thank you to Ben Gary for producing. Did a great job as always. I am Adam Spillane saying thank you for listening. This has been Houston Sports Leader, Sports Radio 610.
What up, y'all? It's your boy, Danny Green, 3-time NBA champ. You either rooted for me or rooted against me. Join myself and my co-host, Harrison Sanford, on the Inside the Green Room podcast.
It's a podcast that brings you never-before-told tales from the locker room to candid interviews with basketball legends to breakdowns of what's happening in the NBA right now. Whether you're a diehard fan or casual about your hoops, this podcast brings you the game like never before.
Follow Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.